You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Well, that intro is a lot more jovial than I feel for this podcast. My name is Dan Rowlandson, joined by Matt Kendrick and James Rushton to discuss another defeat for Villa and pretty drab performance all round. Matt, first of all, let's get your thoughts on the game before we delve into the talking points. What's your general reaction to tonight?
I think we're becoming, you remember Arsene Wenger's Invincibles? I think we're becoming Dean Smith's Predictables. Well, you know, it's just all so samey. It's just, you know, I'm sure we will, and we have spoken about Jack Grealish being absent. We know that's a massive factor, but Villa are still trying the same things, still trying to play more or less the same way with the same shape and the same setup as they did when Grealish was in the team. So, you know, if you're an opposition manager at the moment, you know, you're pretty well set, aren't you? Because you'd back most of your players, with respect to Aston Villa's players, you'd back them to be equal or better than a team that's only been in the Premier League for 18 months. And if there's no air of predictability against the team and you know what you're coming up against each time, you're going to find a way to stop it. And, you know, Tottenham might be a bit strong to say Tottenham were there for the taking, but they've come to Villa Park with loads of pressure on Mourinho. You know, two bad results for them in Europa League and the Premier League against Arsenal. And Villa should have profited. They should have kind of started bright and should have been able to really kind of cause problems for Tottenham. But, you know, it's all kind of huffing and puffing and no end product, isn't it?
Yeah, I want to try and answer a few questions, if we can, from comments now, because we say, let's try and address comments. It's hard when they come in so quickly, but if you've got a question, more so than just a comment, fire them at us and I'll see what we can do. Somebody just said, straight off the bat, if you guys are going to serve up excuses, then I don't know what else to say. Awful, we made a Spurs side, have been in woeful form, look like world beaters. I don't think we made Spurs look good, because I don't think they were particularly good anyway, but we were awful.
We definitely gave them the game.
Before a shot on target from Villa, which is awful. No changes, same predictable nature, like you stated, Matt. I've seen people on Twitter say, with Grealish, we look like a great side, could push for Europe, might just break into there without them, look like a bog-standard Premier League side that might struggle if they have a few injuries hit them. That's what Villa have become with and without Jack Grealish. It shouldn't be that we have to rely on him in the way that we do, but as we've said many, many times before, if you take a player out who's genuinely world-class, in my opinion, it's going to suffer Villa. But Dean Smith and the other professional athletes in Aston Villa Football Club should have a better backup option than let's just try and pump balls into the box and see what happens.
Yeah, without Grealish, it's a lot just going wide and crossing. How many players you see go wide? Keenan Davis out wide, Sanson out wide, Watkins out wide, everyone going out wide. And the crosses, man, what one hit someone's head or looked like it was going to hit someone's head. And the players are small as well. Our team's like notoriously seems quite small. They're pinging in balls like that. It's crazy. But I don't think anyone's here to give excuses for that. We all had to sit through that and watch it. And if people are saying you made Spurs look good or Villa were awful, it doesn't matter. You gave them the game. The two goals they had, we gave them them. We just handed them up. So the biggest frustration for me is that it's just whatever team you play, you know, you can't be the reason for your own downfall. You can't be the reason that the other team wins. They have to do the hard work, and Villa did it all for them, which is the worst thing.
Why don't we change formation, Matt? This is probably isn't a question that you can answer, but why do we seem to persist with things that aren't working?
I don't know. He seems anchored to it, doesn't he? He just really, really seems to favour this 4-3-3, and I just don't think it kind of... I'm not sure we've got the personnel, certainly at the moment, who is showing that they can play that way. And to me, and again, you're going to hear the word Jack and Grealish all the time, but to me, when Jack Grealish is in the team, because of his ability and the way he draws people towards him, he creates overloads in his own right, which means that the rest of the players around him have got space to do what they can do. Now, without him, you're asking each of those players to be better than their direct opponent. How many can say that they've done that? You know, I don't want to dig out the wingers because that tends to be my go-to kind of scapegoats every other week when they don't score. But how often do you find kind of... Let's start Trezeguet. I mean, Trezeguet, how often does he actually beat his man? And commit his man and kind of create space that way? I'm not convinced he does. And something's got to change because it's so samey and so frustrating. And you know, maybe to me, Villa, I wouldn't say they're on the beach just yet because, You know, I know that the nights have started getting lighter, but it's not. You know, we're banned from travelling in Europe, so I wouldn't really want to go on any kind of British beaches at the moment. But it's almost as if they're playing without jeopardy at the moment because they know those points are in the bag. They're not, and we said this last time, didn't we? They're not doing the off the cuff stuff. They're all a bit too kind of, I don't know, it's a bit too safe. To be honest, they're a bit too safe. And to me, it's all adding to it. It's all adding to this kind of sense that, you know, oh yeah, we've had a brilliant first half of the season. We can dine out on that. And listen, Villa aren't in any danger of going down. We know that the points are on the board. So regardless, it's progress from where we were. But it's just, you know, you've got yourself into this position. Surely that's the time when you should be playing with more freedom rather than playing more safely, if that makes any kind of sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I said to James on mute, just before we came on, I said to James that, like, I think it's all just come at the same time. The players know they're safe. Europe's not really realistic. Although, why not have that ambition to go and break into there? But it probably feels like, well, we're probably going to finish mid-table. Grealish goes and gets injured for 5-6 games and we all just kind of fizzle out, and that happens at the same time. And that's just unfortunate for Villa. I don't think it's a case of downing tools so early. It's just, I don't know. I just don't think they have I don't want to say plan B, because we've spoken about this before and I'm not even sure that's a thing as such, but without Jack, we're not as good. And that sounds as simple to say, but we're sitting here going, well, why can't I change this? Why can't I change that? Dean Smith and his coaching team, that's their job to do so, and they're deciding that they can't change it, which means they don't have the players to do so, I would assume. It's not that he's thinking, oh, it's 4-3-3 or nothing. He must think there's other options. The reason he's not doing so is because we don't have the players for it, I guess. We don't have the striker option to change it. Bringing Keenan Davis on when you need a goal for 20 minutes, is that going to work?
That's a frustrating thing. Is Keenan Davis comes in and he seems like he has more of an impact than anyone. Which, you know, he gets on the ball, he makes the runs in. It's like, it's not like Keenan Davis is the answer. It's just that's the level that we're suddenly at now, where the striker we play for 10 minutes here and there comes on with yet again 10 minutes left to go, and he's the one making any kind of impact in the box. And it's just the attacking impetus without Grealish switching from, like, almost going through the central areas to go wide is frustrating. And I get why the calls are there for plan B, because it seems, or change of formation, seems like there could be like a magic bullet to solve this. Doesn't look to be the case. You know, the form table from, what is it, sixth place, Arsenal with 8 points, us in 14th with 5 points, bottom of course Sheffield United with 3 points. There's not a whole lot in it, but with the things Villa have thrown away, you could have been up there. And that's a frustrating thing. That's why fans call for plan B. That's why they call for the magic bullet changes. But got to ride the wave. I think we've been here, done this before. We've always had the streaks. And it is just one of those annoying Aston Villa things when we lose a key player that we have to ride this rubbish form wave.
Andrew Wing, or Andrew Winge, which is probably more appropriate, says, why is John McGinn undroppable? Why is he still, not that he, why is he still playing? Again, the options aren't there, I don't think. But he's not been the same John McGinn that he was. How long? Well, I did a tweet earlier saying, you know, I want Project Restart Douglas Luiz back in the side, that form that he had at the back end of last season. And then I followed it up with a 2019 John McGinn. But is it too harsh to say that John McGinn hasn't been good for quite a while, really?
I think so. If you think about John McGinn, the start of last season, he was probably Villa's brightest player for a month or 6 weeks. Yeah. And then even before he got injured, around Christmas time, I think it was against Southampton, there were already signs that McGinn was creaking before he got injured. I don't think we've seen...
Worse then, to be fair.
Yeah. I don't think we've seen McGinn at his best since the early weeks of the Premier League season. That's not to say he's been as poor as he seems to have been in recent weeks. But yeah, I think I'm not sure what it is. He's certainly lost a bit of his zip. And I think we've said that Villa have gifted them 2 goals tonight, which is true. But if you compare and contrast the movement for Spurs' first goal versus some of the kind of wasted positions that Villa had tonight and in recent weeks in those attacking areas, it's night and day. It really is, because just look how Lucas Moura even wanted to win that ball. It wasn't a great clearance from Martinez, but still, it was Moura who kind of made that happen, being on the front foot. And you don't see that. You don't see Villa fans, you don't see Villa players being that determined to kind of make things happen. They're reacting rather than being, you know, what the whatever the opposite, proactive rather than reactive. And you know, you can say McGinn, but any of the midfield really shone tonight?
Nope.
Well, who's your creative midfielder without Jack Grealish? Because it should be John McGinn, because you know, in the last few seasons he's almost been a second striker. He's so far pinned back now. If you level with Douglas Luiz, who's a central defensive midfielder, where's the output? Where's the creativity? If you have to wait 60-odd minutes to put Ross Barkley on to get some creativity, if Morgan Sanson's been run down and McGinn's been run down, that's a problem. That really is a problem for me.
It's gone past in the feed now, but someone asked earlier about why our set piece is so bad, and I tweeted something similar as well during the game. Just can't beat it first, man. Mm. That Traore corner was pathetic, and I think Sanson took one after that, and people saying, oh, we miss Conor Hourihan, and as much as we talk about Hourihan, all he brings is set pieces. At least he did bring that. I'm not advocating that Hourihan should be coming in and starting Premier League games for Aston Villa, but we don't have anyone, again, without Jack Grealish, who did take corners, to be fair. But without him, we don't have that creative spark, and I don't know whether it's as simple to just go, oh, no, Jack Grealish, no Aston Villa, but it does seem that that's the case, and it shouldn't be at this stage.
It's hard, isn't it, because somebody said it's like, I think I tweeted kind of Aston Villa without Jack Grealish is like the cause without the sisters. And it is kind of, it's hard to replace Jack. We know you can't replace Jack Grealish because he's one of the top five or six players in the Premier League. So a club, Aston Villa, 18 months in the Premier League, aren't going to have a like-for-like replacement to step straight into his boots. But with Ross Barkley, you should have, even if it's a kind of a, you know, a toned down version or whatever, or a watered down version. Say that again?
Like a B-Tech Jack Grealish.
Well, yeah, well, that's it. Like Jack Grealish light. You should have something. Yeah. You should have somebody who can play on the front foot in a number 10. I know Jack doesn't tend to play as a number 10. I know he tends to come in from the wing. But you should have somebody who's bright enough to get close enough to the striker. And if you haven't, Dean Smith should be working on somebody who he's got within his kind of head count. He should be drilling somebody to play that role, you know, and it's, we just don't seem to have it. It just seems to be so plodding and so methodical. And if you throw into that the fact that this really, really strong defence has now started gifting goals, and it just makes it, it's relegation form. You know, let's not pretend that the form that Villa have been in certainly since Grealish has been out, and probably if you roll it back to New Year's Day, to the start of this calendar year, it's relegation form. Fortunately, that relegation form is not going to come back and bite us too much on the backside, because we're already safe because we've had such a brilliant start to the season. But you know, something's got to change, because it's so bleak, and Villa want to entice that next level of player so that we can kick on to the level next season that we thought we were going to kick on to this season. And I'm not sure that at the moment, you know, we're not seeing anywhere near the best version of Aston Villa.
Yeah, I don't want to be dramatic because it sounds silly, but when was the last time that you enjoyed watching Villa this season?
We weren't going to see our last win again, because we won against Leeds and that weren't enjoyable.
Boxing Day, Palace?
Maybe. The real swagger against Palace, didn't we?
Even the draw against Chelsea, it was shortly after. That was still pretty fun.
That's it, isn't it? Yeah. At this point, Villa aren't going to go down. They're not going to get into Europe. So I want to be entertained, and I'm not. I'm bored watching.
Did enjoy watching us away at Burnley first off.
When the under-18s played against Liverpool, yeah. That was fantastic.
But football should be fun, and I don't want to just write it off and go, oh, football's entertainment, because I want Villa to win games as well, and I'd almost say win at all costs. But I'm bored watching Villa at the moment. You can call me a rubbish fan or whatever word you want to slot in there, but I'm bored watching Villa at the moment without Jack Grealish. Jack Grealish brings a swagger to Villa, and without him, it's boring.
Here's a question. Would you rather us lose every game like we lost the Burnley one, or just draw and lose like we have been doing? I'm leaning towards the Burnley one, because the agony is at least an emotion rather than the frustration.
Just laughing at Matt Kendrick calling me a rubbish fan in the private chat on here. It's fair though, isn't it? It is boring now.
Yeah, we're all here to be entertained. You pay tickets, pay money for tickets to be entertained. You know, the whole industry is built around entertainment. Like, there has to be some level of where it's fun, because it is. And look, you know, I don't want to get carried away, because I think 10th after where we finished last season, or even 11th, 12th, 13th after last season. Still some kind of progress, but in the short term, it's still perfectly reasonable to be unhappy and annoyed and upset. Because you're sitting down on your Sunday evening watching that, and it's hard.
Yeah. Missed a line of duty for this. Marco says, are you not happy with 10th-ish after barely staying up last season? Is that fair, Matt? Because, yeah, obviously...
I'm delighted. doesn't mean that when we underperform and we underachieve that we need to be satisfied with that. I think, listen, we've said before, whatever happens this season now is going to be progress. We had to wait until the last... kind of 5 minutes of the game at West Ham last season to be safe. So I'm more than satisfied with Villa, the position that Villa will finish in this season, because it will be higher than they finished last season. I just think that you know, Jack Grealish is not going to be around forever, and that's not me flogging him to Manchester City like Sky Sports or whoever else did with their tweet the other day. Jack Grealish won't be around forever, so these are the perfect opportunities to try and work out two or three different ways of playing when he's not there. When he is there, you're going to give the ball to Jack Grealish. Well, why do you need another? Why do you need a different way of playing? But when he's not there, you've got to try and be a little bit more creative. And that's where the likes of Dean Smith, Richard O'Kelly, Craig Shakespeare, John Terry, Neil Cutler, have got to earn their money, really. You know, everything that we've asked of them so far, they've delivered. You know, got us into the Premier League, kept us in the Premier League, helped us consolidate in the Premier League. So what does the next phase look like? And to me, the next phase looks like surrounding Jack Grealish when he's in the team with an even better level of player than they've managed to put together last summer. And when he's not in the team, how can you find a way that Villa can still be creative and can actually stretch teams and make themselves hard to play against? They're not hard to play against at the moment.
How many players do you think we'll need to add in the summer, James, if we are to push on? If, say, if Europe is the aim next season, how do we bridge that gap from 12th to 6th, for example?
I mean, the obvious answer is at the very least one who's a creative midfielder, because, again, without Jack Grealish, who's your playmaker? Like, who's got the creativity? In the roles you're playing, it's not going to be McGinn, it's not going to be Luiz, more than likely not going to be Barkley, is it? So who's going to be bought in the summer to be a creative midfielder? If not one, at least two, because Villa, if you lose your key, teams struggle when they lose key players. So it's very obvious that Villa are going to run into brick walls without Jack Grealish, but they need to address that problem in the summer. A lot of people can say in the comments, you know, what does he think of the football we're playing now, Grealish? He's going to be off next season. At the start of the season, he signed a 5-year contract with the expectation that we'd probably finish 15th or 14th or 13th. He said in an interview not 3 weeks ago that, you know, it's above everyone's expectations in the club. So I'm not fazed about that at all. It's about building around him. We don't need to plan post-Grealish. We need to plan for Grealish, because he's more than likely going to be here next season. We can make a fist of it, really make a fist of it next year and become a better football club. Just enduring this really horrible, horrible stretch of form at the moment.
I'm going to talk about Dean Smith shortly. I had a little exchange with a fan on Twitter who was saying that, you know, we don't need this negativity. We don't need to be over the top with our negativity, because I called Villa useless tonight. And he said that was too over the top. Someone else in the comments has asked about Villa fans being fickle and things like that. Are we getting too negative with our opinions because Villa are playing poorly? Or is it fair to suggest that Villa aren't as good as we thought they were at a stage in this season?
Is that to me? Sorry, I was just looking at my tablet.
Basically, are we being too overreactionary in our opinions, that we're being too negative or too positive? We need to be kind of middle out a little bit, or is it fair to be annoyed that Villa aren't that good at the moment?
Oh, we're football fans, aren't we? You know, we really change like the wind. Of course, we're not reviewing the season as a whole here now, really. We're reviewing that kind of hour and a half that we've just seen, and it was against the Tottenham team that were out of form. Manager who was wobbling a little bit. Villa who started the game well enough in terms of possession and territory, and just shot themselves in the foot, not once but twice. In fact, if they're shooting at the opposition goal was as good as they're shooting in their own foot, we wouldn't be having this debate anyway. But you know, I'm excited for Ollie Watkins in these next couple of weeks, because he's going to actually probably be able to go into a penalty area and expect the ball to come to him. You know, he's going to have Jude Bellingham threading him through, and Phil Foden and Mason Mount and who else? Jesse Lingard, and you know, he's probably going to get this. Even if he doesn't play a single minute for England, he's at least going to be able to kind of hopefully be trained into a little bit, you know, back into a little bit of form by having people who have been creative around him.
What do you think, James, about the kind of fan reaction, I guess?
Yeah, you're absolutely allowed to criticise. You know, if you play poorly, it's just that gap between criticism and becoming that kind of out swinging on the outcomes all the time. If you're calling for Dean Smith to go,
talk about that in a second.
Yeah, that trainer thought, you know, 6 games down the track that we're going to have 6 different managers if that's the way we're going to work. But, you know, you're allowed to criticise Villa, absolutely, because they've been poor. And if we were paying money to go down, absolutely criticise them, but you know, don't separate that. You can still have a long-term goal and a short-term goal. Short-term, we've been pretty poor. Long-term, it's been all right. It's been a good journey, but short-term, we're here to review a match, like Matt said. It was bad.
Yeah, this season has been far better than anyone's expectations, I don't know where we'd finish if we lost every game between now and the end of the season, but we'd probably be better than 17th. It'd be a disaster, but still. But the last 6 games or so have been rubbish, and when people say, oh yeah, but think about the relegation season and how much better we are then than we are now. So, well, yeah, fair, but it's irrelevant, isn't it? It's also not as good as when we won the league in 81. Where, how far back do you want to go with history? Do you know what I mean? To compare the current situation to the past. We're rubbish at the moment now. That's what we'll talk about. If we win the next 3, we'll be going, oh my God, we're going to win the league. That's what these podcasts are in the moment. When we review the season as a whole, maybe our opinions will level out a little bit.
I see Jamie Redknapp, the poor man's Matt Kendrick, has compared Villa without Grealish to being like the Beatles without McCartney. No, mate, it's like the Cause without the Sisters, all right?
But the Beatles didn't ever go without McCartney, so he's got no reason to go on that opinion, has he? They disbanded, so that's false.
I'm not sure whether the Cause have ever gone without the Sisters either, mate, but still, don't need to get bogged down into that level of detail. Harry Kane's kind of step over, nowhere near the ball, that Matty Cash bought for the penalty.
Oh my God.
I thought it was a penalty.
Oh, it was. It was a penalty. I'm just thinking, you know, Kane's absolutely played him there, hasn't he?
Stuart just said, was never a penalty. Am I the only one who thinks that? Anyone else disagree that it wasn't a penalty?
I thought the contact was tough. I thought it was like, I thought VAR would have a better look at it, to be honest. I always thought it was going to go, you know, be a penalty, but I thought, is the contact truly there for at least the, you know, Mike Dean to go to the monitors? But Matty Cash shouldn't be sliding in like that, in the box, like full stop, because you make the question of it then for the referee and VAR to answer, which is, I can see why people think that though.
I think there was contact. I think it is a penalty. But then you hear stuff in other games and previous decisions we've seen where you've got to be in control of the ball and stuff like that. And Harry Kane is in control of the ball and it's going out for a goal kick or a corner, wherever the ball was going. So is it really a penalty? But then he's taken the man, hasn't he? He's made contact, he's gone sliding in, he's given Mike Dean a decision to make, to use a cliche, and the penalty's given, and Villa hand Spurs the victory, pretty much.
And Mike Dean wheels away in delight.
Let's talk about Dean Smith then. Again, there's almost 500 people watching live at the moment, so a little bit of a straw poll. Dean Smith in or Dean Smith out? It sounds ridiculous to even talk about it, but I've seen comments tweeted at us this evening, comments in this Facebook stream as we go live tonight, saying he's taken us as far as he can, it's time to get somebody else in, he's got no plan B, we need a better, stronger, more Premier League savvy manager to take Villa up to that European spot next season and beyond. First of all, your two, quick opinion, Dean Smith in or Dean Smith out?
In. No question.
Also in. Or is there a case to say that not whether he should go or not is maybe too far, but that he can be questioned and criticised?
Of course he can be questioned and criticised. You know, he's a multi-millionaire football manager who's paid big money to make decisions that win football matches. But, you know, that there's a long stretch between us kind of digging him out for his substitutions or his tactics or his lack of a plan B, or, you know, whether Villa can cope without Jack Grealish than there is to saying he should be sacked. Bloody hell, he must be bang on schedule, if not ahead of schedule by now, surely. Surely, yeah, in terms of tangibles, what he's actually achieved. Are we behind where we should be? Are we?
Probably a little bit ahead. At the right now. We should, you know, we were planning again, like everyone said, you know, that Jack Grealish said no one expected this. This is higher than our expectations. So right now, Surely it's even just a smidgen ahead.
What's annoying is, because I'll put this point across, I'm fully Dean Smithian. People saying if you Smith out, go and support Blues. I'm not suggesting Dean Smith out, by the way. I know we've got a platform where we're speaking to 500 people here. I'm not saying Dean Smith out. But I've seen comments like, oh, he's got to go, he's taken as far as I can. And then I ask for people in or out, and it's in, and makes me look stupid. If you are Dean Smith out, give us a reason as well. Don't just say Dean out, because we need context for that. Sometimes you can't blame the manager for poor performances, which I don't think is completely true. And Alex says, that's so daft. Who would you want in? And now they're or Pulis, etc. But yeah, I just don't see the point of getting rid of him. Like you said, Matt, we're ahead of schedule, if anything. And at one point we're thinking, oh, Villa might crack into Europe this year. And now we're going, oh, he's taken us as far as he can, get rid.
I had a message on Twitter from someone under the account name Great Bar Guardiola, who was laying into Dean Smith, thinking, hang on a minute.
You know, Rafa his agent in disguise.
There's some kind of identity crisis here. You know, he was great by Guardiola, but that was a couple of weeks ago when we won. He's now kind of, I don't know what the equivalent would be.
Now he's Ginger Mourinho.
That's it. It's he's now the Midlands Mike Bassett rather than the great by Guardiola. But now, listen, you just wish that he'd kind of revert back to kind of super exciting Dean Smith and be a little bit more flexible with his kind of, with his approach to games. Now, he clearly doesn't think he's got the personnel to play a different way. But to me, this should be a reminder that he's not necessarily got the personnel to play that way, because he's not currently working. You know, I don't know what the answer is, to be honest. Like I said, I think the fact that kind of Barkley has let him down a little bit, the fact that his wingers can be a bit flaky, the fact that his midfielders, you know, nobody consistently steps up to the plate for more than 90 minutes. You know, you don't get too many of those central midfielders who are producing the goods two matches in a row. Is that the manager? I think it is the manager in a way, because he's got to be the one who kind of, with his team, kind of coaches that confidence or coaches that consistency into them. But I don't know. We've got to the, we seem to have got to the Martin O'Neill March, but hit it in January, don't we? No, it's all a bit frustrating, a bit flat, isn't it, at the moment?
Cliche alert, has the international break come at a good or a bad time for Villa, do you think? A little reset button, maybe?
Could have happened. I'd have liked it a few weeks ago, to be fair. It's all right, though. It's come at a good time.
Nice. It's come at a good time because it gives Jack Grealish another 2 weeks to try and get back to fitness.
Yeah, will we see Jack Grealish against Fulham, do we think? Or is it going to be another one where we go, Smith's made a point of it now. Like, yeah, definitely back. 99.9% he'll be back. He's made a point of saying it now. If he doesn't play against Fulham, people are going to be going, what is going on with Grealish now? And not just about his tracksuit.
But doesn't this happen all the time, Matt? Like with the Jack Grealish, like injuries for Villa in general? Because he said it about Keenan Davis and Gilbert and Matty Cash, like, they never come back on schedule, like whatever the manager's schedule is. So I think it's not just a Grealish thing, is it?
Yeah, you'd hate Dean Smith to be a GP, wouldn't you? You know, so yeah, it's okay. Everything's going to be fine. And you can just see a kind of hearse pulling up just outside the doctor's surgery. I got a bit of stick over the weekend because I did a story. I'd actually got some information for once that Grealish definitely wouldn't play tonight and that he's touch and go for Fulham. And I wrote that story. But in that story, I included Dean Smith's quotes that, you know, he's going to have a fitness test on Saturday morning, and we're 99.9% guaranteed that he's going to play against Fulham. We've said this before. It's become kind of amateur psychology now. The gains that they think they can have by playing amateur psychology with the opposition. You know, psychological warfare against the opposition by sowing seeds of doubt in the opposition. I think they're being undone by the absolute frustration and annoyance that it's causing the fan base at the moment. I think you just need to come clean and say, listen, you've got this knock. It's turned out to be more serious than we thought. You know, we're hopeful that he'll make the next game, but at this stage we can't say. Let's see what the next couple of weeks brings. I mean, I don't know. I've not heard what Dean Smith has said post-match. You know, and there. Meanwhile, there's Jack Grealish sitting there in his rascal tracksuit.
That tracksuit's a bit of you, I reckon. You look good in
me.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Think I could carry that off?
Oh, you've got to see. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, nice that is. Is that original from back in the day? Like you've had that since the 90s?
It is, mate, yeah. And I went to pull it over my head and I thought, oh God, it's so tight. I can't fit it on. Because I've only tried it on for the first time tonight. I can't fit it on. Then I realised that the button was done up. So I was trying to give birth to myself by trying to get my head through. But no, it looks all right, mate. It stinks a bit because it's been up the loft. But it looks all right. I don't think I'd get away with that little Nike swish number that Jack was wearing there.
Is it? Go on, James.
The worst thing about that it wasn't attractive. It was the conversation that Gary Neville was having over it. It's like, is it pajamas? And it's like very clearly like a tracksuit. Is it a onesie? It's like,
yeah,
it's a matching tracksuit, man. You know what it is.
You know, and like they've got a joke that, I mean, telling us flogging jokes. That's what this podcast is made on. Like they come back to it like a minute later and he's like, going, I was like, oh, we wore suits in our day. It's like, all right, we get it, mate. He's wearing a tracksuit.
If you said it was a rascal, what did you say it was a rascal tracksuit before? There's photos on Getty of Gary Neville wearing some dubious material.
Oh, man, yeah. So,
yeah, we'll get them out.
How much do you reckon that outfit cost, Grealish, though, do you reckon? All that branded gear?
Nothing, I reckon. The only boy wants to, wasn't
it? Yeah, fair.
I reckon he's got boxes full of it.
Is that top from 1996, Matt?
I'm not sure whether it is, you know, but I know you're going to use it for a nice segue into our wonderful mini doc.
Yeah, do you want to plug it, seeing as you've given it the wonderful tag?
Yeah, it's on Wednesday. On Wednesday at about 6 or 7 p.m. on the evening is it's exactly a quarter of a century since Villa actually won anything. If you forget the Peace Cup and that ridiculous trophy that John Terry and James Chester held a couple of years ago somewhere. And what did you show me? Albert Adama holding a bin or something.
It's a base charity vase thing. Put some respect on its name.
I've got a story for not putting respect on the base charity vase's name. Anyway, last time Villa won a proper trophy was on March 24th, 1996. And it's been a real labour of love in the last couple of weeks because we managed to get all of my heroes on. Brian Little, well, not all of them, but some really important ones from 1996. Brian Little, Ian Taylor, John Gregory, who were respectively the manager, goal scorer, first team coach, to reminisce about that. Some brilliant stories. Great fun recording it. And 40 minute special, which you can find somewhere on our YouTube channel. It was good. I enjoyed it. I think people will like it, won't they, Dan?
Well, I hope so, yeah. It's not for me to say. I thought it was pretty good. What comes with that as well is obviously there's a John Gregory interview in there and a Brian Little interview in there that no one has seen anywhere else yet. There was also a full-length feature Claret and Blue podcast with those to come at some point as well. A little spoiler there, obvious that we've spoken to them, but it wasn't just about 96. We've got their whole Villa careers told in podcast form as well, and they were both very good in their longer episodes as well, which will probably be coming out in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I think we've got one coming out this week that we've not spoken about yet, which I'll keep private for now. But yes, good, isn't it, these little interviews? They all come at once, don't they? Like a shot on target for Villa in the 60th minute.
I do indeed, and I want to apologise to John Gregory's family for keeping him hostage for so long as well when we spoke to him.
How long was it in the end, the actual...
About 3 hours, I think.
Just show 3 hours, yeah.
You got to release that as a full thing, man.
We met his dog, didn't we, as well?
Meet his dog, and you know, he's probably a quarter of a century older than me, but I was the one who broke first and needed to go for a wee midway through. But no, it was good. Really, really enjoyed it. I think people will enjoy the Coca-Cola Cup special. And like I said, we've got some feature-length interviews with Jack AG and Super Brian Little coming soon as well. So
some
all good. That's a relief. Typical Villa thing, isn't it? You know, when we're miserable, you reach into the past, don't you? You reach to those glorious moments in the past.
It's a nice distraction to talk about that rather than the current day squad at the moment. So, yeah, absolutely go for it. There was also my favourite part of that is the question that you asked Brian Little at the end. I don't know if you want to give it away or not, but that's just peak Claret and Blue.
Nah. Keep that for the trailer. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, fair enough. We'll call it a night there for this episode of Claret and Blue podcast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us live on Facebook.
Before we go. Go on. Just because people have stayed this long, one final bit of nonsense. Does pizza taste better hot or cold? So I've had cold pizza, and I deliberately got my wife to cook mine earlier. I can cook for myself. I'm not saying my wife has to do these things. My wife was cooking our tea, and she put pizzas in the oven. But I said, can I have mine earlier so I could have my pizza cold? Is it absolute stated fact that pizza tastes better cold than hot?
No, it's all right. It
depends on the pizza.
It's like a nice treat after, isn't it? It's like a nice treat after the fact. If you're cooking a pizza, just have it cold.
Yeah, it's good hot to have it hot when it's come fresh and hot, and then you have it cold the day after. That's the usual go-to. Or on the evening or something.
But it tastes nicer when it's cold.
No, it doesn't. No, it depends on the pizza as well.
Did you cook the pizza just to have it cold, Matt?
So again, no, I had cooked it. I didn't just eat it straight out of the freezer.
No, but did you cook it and then just to eat it?
Yeah, let it get cold.
Oh my god, it
was Hawaiian as well, so you don't like pineapple on pizza, do you?
I don't like pineapple full stop, but it doesn't belong on pizza.
Maybe that's why I prefer it cold, because I don't like hot pineapple.
Well, yeah, it shouldn't be on a pizza, should it? It shouldn't be hot. It's a fruit. It shouldn't be on there.
Maybe I'll take the pineapple off next time. I have my main pizza hot and have the pineapple. Take the pineapple off and have my dessert.
Yeah, ham pizza and pineapple in a bowl afterwards.
Seeing
as we're here, very quickly, what's your pizza topping, James? What do you go for?
Ham and pineapple.
Oh, God, I'm ending this. All right, see you later. Thank you for listening to Cloud and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, up the Villa.